Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm still Ned Bolting.
I'm still Adam Tranter.
And I think I'm still Laura Laker.
Well, we'll come to that, Laura, because this time Adam and I have been out in the actual world at the Lee Valley Velo Park, to be precise. But Laura, you had to stay at home.
Yeah.
Because you've been incredibly naughty and you have been grounded by the so-called pandemic, haven't you?
Yeah, I haven't been anywhere, so yeah.
Well, you've been the opposite of naughty. You've been extremely diligent and responsible. How long have you been locked up for?
Well, I haven't left home for a week now. I've got one more day after today, so yeah.
Oof.
I know.
Was that a close contact or have you yourself tested positive?
I'm doing this. It just gives you like a notification on the phone, and it says you have to isolate for 8 days. My first one, and then I realized a couple of days ago that you can go in and see the date when the contact happened, but you don't know who it was, obviously, because they don't take personal data. But yeah, it's just a Bluetooth thing.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
And you missed out. You missed out on the reunion.
I know.
Me and Ned were real life friends. And we missed you.
That.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Laura. But we had a good day out. You'll be really pleased to. you'll be really pleased. It was a beautiful morning. And I rode over to the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park, which is quite near your manor, isn't it, Laura? You're out that way somewhere, aren't you?
Yeah, it's very, very near. Yeah, it's about a 10-minute ride away.
Yeah. Yeah. May I just say, hats off to the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park. It's just incredible, isn't it?
It's amazing.
I think I said that in the. I also go on to say that in what you're about to hear.
Yeah, I thought it was really really cyclable, really really, you know, like a lot of places in London have not had the benefit of being able to build the way you want it to be, and you know, I don't live in London. I haven't lived in London for a while, but if I had to live in London, I'd sort of found that area really quite nice. Lots of stuff to do with kids, and you know. Keep your family entertained and all of that stuff. Great place.
Now, here's a thing I've subsequently learned, actually, just yesterday, and it may not be true, but I think it is true. Do you guys both know Jack Thurston?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Jack, who used to do his radio show on the... What was it called? The
Lost Lanes Jack.
Yeah, Lost Lanes... So Jack Thurston has produced a series of absolutely beautiful books about called Lost Lanes, and there must be half a dozen of them now. There's a kind of Wales one and a Southeast one, and I think there's a Yorkshire Dales one, etc.
Southwest, yeah.
Southwest as well. And he goes off on his kind of touring bike and he just discovers all these literally kind of little B roads and backwaters that are traffic free and lovely places to ride, and he lists them all, and they're beautifully produced books, actually. I really recommend them. Jack also, when he lived in London, used to have a radio show that was about the bicycle. Yeah, I mean, it was on that, I can't remember which platform it was on anyway, but I remember I guested on that a couple of times. He's a lovely chap, but I discovered yesterday that his partner, whose name I don't know, they have a family together, she has been responsible for all the amazing kind of wildflower and wild meadow plantings and the landscaping in the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park.
Ah, really?
There we go.
Which are spectacular, I have to say.
Award-winning. Really,
yeah, thank you to her.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really for botanical reasons that we were there so much as cargo bikes, which are pretty flipping cool things, aren't they? Laura, you missed out on, well, as you're about to hear, we got a chance to ride one. But have you ever actually ridden a car? Do you own a cargo bike?
I don't have one. I've borrowed a friend's cargo bike. It's a three-wheeler. It doesn't have electric assist. But I think you talk about this in your chat, actually, about the weird thing that happens when you ride a three-wheeler and you turn the handlebars one way and then your body goes the other way. And it's quite strange. I managed to get mine up on, or my friend's up on two wheels around a corner. So it was quite good. Yeah, you have to be careful how you corner them. It's quite fun. I think that's the only one I've ridden, actually.
So we're on the cusp of a big boom in the UK, it feels, certainly in urban settings. They're very visible, aren't they, in a way that they weren't so much a year or 2 years ago. And yet, Adam, the numbers are astonishingly low when you compare them to other European neighbours, aren't they? So, you know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's something like 2,000 sold.
Yeah, it's about that. There's actually not that much data on it, which is the start of, you know, which highlights that it is kind of in its infancy. But we reckon about 2,000 e-cargo bikes sold in the last year, and that compares to around 100,000 in Germany and around 50,000 in France. So
wow,
we are behind the curve, but hopefully going on that curve.
All right. Well, listen, there's plenty to discuss. Let's first of all, though, let's just hear our little day out, Adam. Well, this is rather nice, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've been in the shade of the London Velodrome or whatever it's called. Not allowed to call it the London Velodrome. We have to call it the Lee Valley Velo Park thing. I remember when I was commentating and presenting at the London 6 Day series, which is probably the last time I was inside that building before it all got COVIDed out. Every time you referred to the London Velodrome, you got your wrist slapped by the, because it's not the London Velodrome.
Yeah.
So it's a while since I've...
Every time you say it, a marketing manager cries.
And that, exactly. But I'm here at your invitation.
Yeah.
And I've had a nice morning. Thank you very much. You better explain what it is we're doing and why.
Well, this is a glimpse into my real job, and we are at a cargo bike event hosted by Rally.
Yep.
And I thought, who would want to come and have a go on a cargo bike?
Me.
And that was Ned. And you were talking about it, like, you know, you've never had a go, and I thought you'd enjoy it. So we're sort of sat here, you've had a go, ask you what you think about it. But worth mentioning also, there's just loads of good stuff going on here, really, with the Bike Works stuff behind us, which I think Laura, in our previous cargo bike episode, interviewed someone from Bike Works, and basically it's cycling for all. So there's all sorts of wonderful adapted cycles.
Incredible
here.
Stuff.
It's great. Cycles I've never seen before that I didn't know
existed. And a queue
existed.
Of people.
Isn't
a
it
A queue
great?
Of people wanting to have, you know, wanting to get out on the bikes and actually experience kind of going around the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park, which I have to say, this is a slight tangent, Adam, but, you know, the Tokyo Olympics are about to start. And I've never been more pleased not to be involved.
Yeah.
In a broadcast, because I think they're on all sorts of levels thoroughly irresponsible and unwanted by the Japanese public. And I've been around the world sort of quite a bit in my career and visited the remains and the tatters of Olympic parks of years gone by. Sydney is a wasteland. Barcelona is a bit crumbly. Athens might as well not have happened. Montreal, they've only just finished paying the debt off, you know, from 1976. And of all the sort of inflated super ego events that the Olympics are, probably London has come out of it the best. I mean, this park is pretty fabulous, really, isn't it?
It's great. It's really good. And the fact that they've had a blank canvas to build it, you know, it's cycling here is actually quite pleasurable.
So it's
you
not
know?
Just the Bike Works people and you've set up here, and we'll come to talk about that in a second, but just generally.
Just loads of people cycling.
Just loads of people cycling and enjoying the sunshine.
And
it's fantastic.
The environment changes the way people cycle. So I've seen loads of families with kiddie seats on the back, and you just don't really see that in a lot of places that are kind of more hostile. So this is really, build it and build an environment. And it's very low traffic, actually. It is a It's a sort of low traffic neighbourhood, but without the without the shouting.
And the kind of speedy cyclists as well, who would on the road be kind of
well,
like
they've got a velodrome. They can go in there.
Well, they've got their, but even when they when you see them kind of like on these shared use pathways that crisscross all throughout the park, even they kind of ease off a bit, and it's very respectful and kind of like just a great environment. Just a great environment and a lovely sunny day for it. But anyway, so going back to cargo bikes, we've had some inspirational talks, haven't we, from the brand manager or whatever.
And our mate Will Norman's here, isn't he?
And Will Norman, about kind of the explosion in their use. And the evidence in my eyes suggests that's true.
Yeah.
Have you got any facts and figures to
have? Well, yeah, facts are quite thin on the ground in the British market. But I'm told that in Germany, there are 100,000 cargo bikes sold each year.
Yeah.
Most of those e-cargo bikes.
Wow.
78,000, I think, in France. Again, quite we're going to be majority going to be e-cargo bikes because that's where the market is. And in the UK, we're about 2,000 bikes being sold last year.
So
e-cargo
just
bikes. So we are literally just scratching the surface. You'd hope. Mm. And you know, I'm more aware of it now, but like companies like Pedalme, you know, they seem to be everywhere basically now. And I was cycling down Blackfriars Bridge the other day. I saw two people in full DHL liveried cargo bikes. I saw a guy, FedEx cargo bikes. You see here, you've got the Jones Dairy. They've been a dairy for 130 years in London. They actually started with cargo bikes while walking, cargo bikes, milk floats, diesel vans, and now they've gone back to their origins. So, yeah, there's loads of opportunity, I think.
So the MD, was it, of Jones Brothers gave a little speech? I've forgotten his name. Is it Steve? I don't know.
Anyway, whatever. Henry, I think. Maybe.
I just made up Steve. Anyway, he made a really interesting point. He was saying, so they deliver food products, don't they, to the City of London? And he made a really interesting point that answered one of the questions I was going to raise, you know, because the capacity is not as big as a van, clearly. Sure. So I think I'm looking at a bike there that, if I was listening correctly, stores 100 kilograms of stuff and a bunch of litres. I couldn't remember how many litres, 500 litres or something. But 100 kilograms was kind of what stuck in my mind. And so a van obviously carries a lot more than that. So in order to make these deliveries throughout the day and actually shift a large amount of stuff, you're going to have to go back, pick up, go back, pick up, deliver, go back, pick up, deliver. So how's that going to work? And he was saying the city themselves are going to institute these hubs around, presumably around the perimeter of the square mile.
Consolidation centres.
Which is a smart solution, isn't it? So they would then house the bulk of the product, and then the journey time between these hubs and the actual delivery point is actually quite small and best done by a bike.
Yeah, I mean, this is they mainly operate in the City of London. And the City of London have got, you know, at the moment, they're kind of makeshift car parks. The City of London has quite a lot of car parks. You know, if you think about like the Barbican and places down there, they've got these sort of out of use car parks, really. Yeah. And they're starting to build mini consolidation centres and hubs.
In car parks? Old car parks?
Yeah, so that they can...
That's amazing.
They can, and it makes total sense. And the challenge is, I think, and this is what the guys in Pedalme say, is not to... It's very easy with your eyes to look at a van and then look at the bike and then look at the van and go, well, the van's bigger.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking about efficiency, actually, you know, you need to change the system. So Pedalme are able to do more drops than a van would. They can't carry as much, but they can obviously travel more quickly. They're more agile. They can park right outside, all of these things. But they just need to make sure that they're going back to this kind of hub model, because you can't carry everything on a cargo bike, but nor should you need to. And most of the deliveries that we're seeing in central London, well, Norman was just saying, wasn't he? He was saying about, you know, most of it's transit vans, basically. It's people on the gig economy just going around doing last mile deliveries. They have a patch within like 10 streets. It's just, that can't be the best way to do it.
Yeah. And I think the point was also being made that they're reskilling their staff, right? So it's not like they've sacked off a whole load of van drivers and got in a bunch of cyclists to do their deliveries. It's the same people. They've just adapted
their
and
van
really embraced
are just
it.
More fitter now. They were saying
a little bit fitter, and presumably their working life is a bit more appealing, I would imagine.
Like, I think so. I think it's. I'd love it. I'd love to do that as a job.
So despite all that, I mean, I was talking to the guys from Pedalme there who were giving me my tuition before I actually got on the track. And I think he said they've got 65 bikes, which is a pretty small amount, given how visible they are.
Yeah.
And at any given time, probably only about 35 of them were actually out and about doing their thing. So the scope for growth is, like you say, it's just kind of barely begun, has it really?
No, and it's inevitably going to be huge because you look at the size of the amount of deliveries is growing. We all want stuff quicker, faster now, and the bike is really the best way of doing that. And also congestion's projected to increase as well.
Yeah.
So like the just two just aren't mutually compatible. So it's almost an inevitability, I hope, at least. We've got it in Cov, actually, in Coventry. We've got a little startup called Hail Services, and they're doing last mile cargo deliveries, and the council want to do people as well. They want to move people like a taxi, and the council don't know what to do with that. So they've got their cyclists doing minicab licenses, basically. They're doing private hire lessons to get a private hire license because they think that's the way to do it. But it doesn't sound like the way to do it for me.
No.
You know? But
no.
So yeah, it's all moving very quickly, and it's moving more quickly than the legislation is, I guess. And
yeah,
the infrastructure, because you've got to think about where to park these things as well. That's got to be a consideration.
Yeah, so that was another sort of question that I had that was answered when I was just having a chat with one of the guys from Pedal Me just now, is that the operators take their bikes home with them. I said, what are you going to put a bit on there? Big bits of kit. You know, nobody's got a house that big or kind of like a hallway that big. So they just park them on the street. And they've got a couple of locks, a front wheel lock and a rear wheel lock. But what they really have is they've got a built-in tracking device.
Got it.
And he said since they've put those in all their bikes, they have not been nicked. Subsequently, they don't get nicked. And then my other question is, what about the rain? Like, you can't just leave them out in the street and get... And apparently that's just not an issue because they get so regularly serviced.
Yeah.
They get taken in, given a service.
Batteries off, maybe.
Absolutely, and they're absolutely fine. They're kind of rain resistant. So you just...
Yeah.
You park them on the street and you chain them to a lamppost.
Yeah, also, if you think about the average... You know, not the professional bike thief, but the average... I mean, a Pedal Me bike is so distinctive, and there are so few of them now that you'd be pretty dumb to steal one.
Yeah.
Can't put that past thieves, but opportunistically...
Well, look, cars get stolen as well, right?
Quite. It does happen. But opportunistically as well, like, they're quite hard... Well, I don't know, tell me, do you find it hard to ride? Because, like, if you're the average thief who just opportunistically jumps on a cargo bike and pedals it away, I'd say that's probably quite a hard bike to make a getaway on if you've never ridden one before.
Yeah, it takes a bit of adjustment, that's all it is. It's a bit of adjustment. What was quite interesting was I tried two vehicles, one that was that long wheelbase two-wheeler thing.
Yes.
Which is the Rally have got a new one out called Stride, haven't they?
Yes, Rally Stride, and that's like a normal bike, basically, with a box on the front, but longer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But every little movement that you do with the handlebars through physics and maths, for some reason, don't ask me why, is exaggerated. So because your wheel is like half a mile in front of you, you know, and you can barely see it in the mist, your front wheel, you tweak to the right and the whole bike sort of like lurches to the right. And so that just requires a bit of recalibrating what it's all about. And then really, really kind of interesting combination of twisting down and up the gears with your right wrist and your left wrist flicking more or less power, and you kind of surf both those dynamics at the same time according to, you know, where you're at. And like, by the way, the gear shifters are incredible because instead of having like, and maybe this is standard on bikes nowadays, I don't know, I've just so long since I've ridden a new bike, but there's a hub gears, right?
Yeah
And instead of having sort of like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 as numbers, it's got this like diagram with a little, like, have you seen it? With a little bike.
Oh, it's got like a flat little, to hill.
It's got like a hill that kind of like, so you move it down and the hill flattens out with a little cyclist on. So it kind of makes it very clear. Like, okay, so I'm going up a bit of a climb now. Let's scrunch the hill up a bit.
And it
just drops the gears down.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Did you ride the trike?
I rode the trike, and that was strange.
Yeah. When I rode a trike, I was very discombobulated by it. I was like,
it's really odd, but I mean, you know, it takes you 5 minutes to adjust.
No,
really.
you put your knee out, don't you? And you you have to lean, basically.
Yeah, well, what it does is it kind of like you turn to the left and your hips get sort of like pushed over to the right for some reason. It kind of like it cuts you in half and sends the lower half of your body in the wrong direction. I can't figure that out. But it's but actually they feel it's a totally different thing. Instead of kind of like riding a bike and, you know, bending into the corners a little bit instinctively. What you do is kind of surf the road surface in a really quite a lovely way. So they are different, but they're.
I think the challenge with because I rode one of those from Islington to the Jones's Brothers office actually in Limehouse and London is full of, it's getting better, but it's full of bollards and gates that are, we know, because we've talked about it with Isabel from Wheels Wellbeing, you know, they are restrictive to people on adapted cycles and things like that.
Yep.
And that's includes, you know, the ones that we've seen, all the kind of different types of two-wheelers to four-wheelers, all these kind of bikes here, and it affects cargo trikes as well. So if we're going to have a city that takes last mile cargo seriously, then we need to probably bash those bollards and
how much of your little trial ride was actually on just regular roads?
It was all pretty much regular.
No, it was all main roads.
It was all regular. It was all actually in Islington. Islington all out was amazing. It's like low traffic neighbourhoods, which you know, are actually really well suited because they're normal roads and you see quite a lot of cargo there. Some of the cycle lanes, is it CS1 that goes out to East London? I think it is. But that was like the first proper cycle lane that the London built.
Yeah.
And it's aged really badly. Yeah. Like, you know, you look at it and go, God, that's really bad. It's really narrow.
Yeah.
Basically, it's about wide enough for a cargo trike.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So no overtaking, no nothing. You know, curbs. It's got loads of adverse cambers as well.
Yeah, it has,
speed bumps.
Quite technical.
Not fun. I think that's what got me. But you know, that's just personal preference. There'd be a lot. I'm a confident cyclist, and riding a two wheeler is the best option for me. But there'd be people who are asked by their workplace to go and ride a bike to deliver some cakes, and the trike is probably a bit more safe for them. You know, because they've got they're not going to fall off it. Probably. Yeah. You
although in a trike in traffic, you're not moving any faster than the traffic, are you?
You can't
overtake anything.
Yeah.
There's no nipping up the sides around the corners and like you do on a conventional two-wheeler bike.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's good to have choices. Do you do your shopping by bike? Can you see yourself on a cargo bike in the future, or are you happy with your pannier racks and a loaf of bread and a, you know?
Yeah, I am. I haven't got a big family to feed. They've all buggered off and left home, which is great. So that might be a different proposition if I had to do sort of big family shops and all that sort of thing. I might think about that. And also, I'm just holding the whole gear, sort of battery-assisted riding. I'm holding it in reserve for later on in life when I will embrace it fully. But I'll, I'm raging against the fading of the light at the moment.
Yeah.
And I shall carry on using my legs for as long as my legs allow me
that
to.
Is.
And at the moment, my legs are allowing me to do that. So,
yeah.
You know.
I rode a non-electric bike, and I say it like that because I only really ever ride electric bikes now.
Yeah.
Because I'm the opposite. Like, I wouldn't cycle very much if I didn't have an e-bike, because I'm a sweaty person,
right,
basically.
Yeah.
And if I'm turning up for meetings and stuff like that.
Well, you got a proper job there.
Yeah. But, you know, all of that stuff aside, I rode to Coventry Station yesterday to come down here to London and rode on a non-electric bike. And
how did that go?
The whole thing was a very stressful thing. It was hot. It was like 30 degrees. I had a 3-speed hub gear, and I'm normally 10 minutes early for my train, and I arrived on the dot. The train was late. That's the only reason I got the train, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was sweating buckets.
Yeah.
I just can't see myself not riding an electric bike now. And you know what? Like, if that makes me ride rather than not riding at all, then that's probably a good thing, all things considered.
Do you know, it's mad, though, because I've just come back from 3 weeks of staying in a hotel in Kent and commuting to commentate on the Tour de France for ITV, commentating sort of 3 miles to the studios and 3 miles back through country roads. And we were staying in the same hotel and working in the same studios for a couple of weeks at the beginning of the Tour de France as the ITV football team. Now, so the ITV football production team was absolutely huge for the Euros compared to our tiny little.
And what they get like big, like full English breakfast at the start, and you get like a banana or something.
Yeah,
like, it's
well,
the budget.
Pretty much. Well, put it this way. I said this in
another
podcast.
They got a guy holding an umbrella over them to keep them cool.
Get this right. They're set, right? Just the desks and the seats in which the pundits sat, right? Cost more than our entire production for the Tour de France for 3 weeks.
Oh my God, wow.
And quite significantly more as well. Anyway, that aside, just a little indication of the various statuses of the two sports, right? The entire production team, as I say, staying in the same hotel with the same commute every day and back, they were given, for the duration of their stay in the hotel, they were all given high-end e-bikes.
Oh, wow.
Right, by, you know, to encourage them to maybe... I think I saw one being... So outside the hotel, there were dozens and dozens and dozens of these incredibly expensive e-bikes just sitting there, all locked up. No one was using them, even though they'd been like, go on, use that.
Yeah.
It was unreal how oh my hard gosh. It is to persuade non-cyclists, inverted commas, to embrace a new experience or to kind of like... But those lads who did actually decide to have a go loved it.
As you ride an e-bike, which is why, you know, getting people on e-cargo bikes is important at places like this, is... You know, you get that, like, people in the industry call it, like, an e-bike smile, basically, and you get it straight away.
Yeah.
I love seeing the pictures every year you see when there's a football tournament of the Dutch football team who all cycle to training, and that's always always nice to see. But, hey, I bet the ITV football didn't have Alexis Sale on their programme,
no,
though.
No, he was brilliant.
There we go.
Do you know what?
A friend of the podcast.
It all started with Laura, actually. Laura put me in contact with Alexi. Alexi then guested on Streets Ahead.
Yes.
Then, because we'd got on so well, I said, just speculatively, I said to Alexi, because he expressed such an affection for the Tour de France, I said, why don't you come down, like, to Maidstone and I'd never thought he'd like ping straight back an email. I'd absolutely love to.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then he turned up in the what is ostensibly nothing more nor less than a car park with a porter cabin in Kent, and he got out of his car and he said, I'm just overwhelmed. And he carried on like that. He was with us all day, did another podcast with us, made us laugh, kept us entertained. And then I was just tuning in last Sunday to Radio 4's Broadcasting House on Sunday mornings, and he was guesting on that. And he managed to crowbar his visit down to...
Oh, wow.
He said, I honestly, I had the best day of my entire life, he said.
Wow.
He's a super fan.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
But it all started with Streets
Ahead. It all started. And Laura's email. Laura cannot be with us.
Yeah, but
to this live,
yeah.
live, well, pre-recorded broadcast. Live pre-recorded. We're doing it live now, aren't we? Laura was going to be here. She was going to ride cargo bikes with us. And she got pinged.
Yeah.
She got pinged. She was trying to be a good citizen and drop the leaflets drop leaflets about a community project she was working on with her, and she must have got talking to someone at the doorstep or something.
But just going back to cargo bikes, a couple more thoughts. You say, well, would you embrace them? I've just thought, actually. So Maidstone was where we were broadcasting at the Tour de France, and that's I don't know how far it is, it's I'm going to say it's about 35-40 miles from my house roughly, and I rode down there and I rode back.
Yeah.
Okay. So I rode back Monday morning. And and this is the stupid compromise thing, because I was going there for a month, I had a big suitcase full of clothes.
There you go.
So ludicrously, a courier in a van had to take my suitcase ahead of me, right, and dump it at the hotel while I cycled back. And the same on the return journey. If I'd had a cargo bike, I could have put my suitcase in the cargo bike and done both. And And then I felt really bad about it. Like, actually, I've achieved nothing because my suitcase had to be taken down there anyway. But then I thought, that's not totally true, is it? Because I got my bike and then I did all my traveling for 3 weeks in Maidstone by bike. So I kind of like, you know, whatever.
That's sort of like you're sort of a budget Richard Branson, really. Because I don't know if you saw, but when he went on his way to space, he cycled.
It wasn't space, Adam.
Well, when he went to whatever, the ozone. Yeah. He cycled there, but he cycled through the desert, flanked by two big Range Rovers with their hazards on.
Oh, yeah, that's brilliant. I did see that.
With all his stuff in, probably, for space.
Yeah, it wasn't space. Okay, if Richard Branson went to space, then that's a bit like saying, I've been to the M25, therefore I've been to London.
Reddies, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that's all mad. That's another episode, isn't it? But they're all talking about... That all the billionaires are talking about now they've been up there.
Yeah.
It suddenly occurred to them that we should look after our planet. And old Jeff from Amazon has reportedly said that we should try and do all the pollution in space and keep Earth nice.
Well, Jeff, just my advice to Jeff, because I'm sure he listens to Streets Ahead.
Yes, and he does.
Is your space rocket that looks like a penis, park it, right? Stick it away, never use it again, right?
Yeah.
And if you want to save the planet... Maybe instead of investing your entire fleet of vans, right? Why not get cargo bikes, you total bell end? I think I should. I think I probably owe our podcast listeners an apology of sorts. It's uncharacteristic language for me to use. And I don't think it's really in keeping with this laid-back style of Streets Ahead. So I hope no one was offended by my sudden anger about Jeff Bezos and his a space program. And in fact, all the I'm not singling him out for particular vilification, although I'd be quite happy to. It's all the billionaires who have had a space race recently. I cannot think of a more fatuous and wasteful example of human endeavor and resources than those boys and their toys. And I wish them every failure with their future products. And as a result, I just think it's the worst thing. I don't know. Do you share my, is it just me? Do you share?
No, it's, I mean, I don't know anything about the space race, but I do know about, you know, the general wastefulness of Amazon. And yeah, it's, yeah, it's just not really what we should be wasting our money on.
Yeah, I'll just check Amazon off our list of potential sponsors.
Adam, was that, sorry, you two. Was that ever realistic?
No, but it's in such dire straits, we might end up doing that thing where you say, like, buy something of Amazon and we'll make 3p, please. No, it's not that bad, don't worry.
Yeah. So, Laura, I mean, what did you sort of glean from our little chat about cargo bikes, and what can you add to the debate?
I really enjoyed your chat. I liked hearing about Alexei and how much he enjoyed his Tour de France experience. That was just really sweet.
He's just been raving about it.
That's really nice.
We'll have to get him back on.
I know, yeah. He's a nice guy. And Pedal Me, we all like them. I liked hearing about e-bikes. I'm a big e-bike fan as well. I've got one too. And what else did I think?
The one area I don't think we really touched on, Adam, that's been kind of bothering me slightly is, and maybe you've got some facts and figures or some theories at least at your fingertips, is the kind of embedded carbon that comes with a mass-produced e-bike. You know, at what point in its life cycle does it start to pay itself back the carbon debt it's been born with?
Yeah, I don't have that information, and I don't want to come across as flippant, but we should always put it into the kind of wider context of an e-bike battery is 1/500th of a e-car battery. So let's take some, you know, the basic kind of division of that. It is a, you know, it is a drop in the ocean as in terms of the production. That's not to say we should ignore it, but in the list, like with, you know, helmets being in the list of things that keep you safe, the list of things to focus on in terms of carbon intensive production, not that we can't all make small improvements, you know, the cars that are being swapped every 3 years because of consumerism should probably be at the a high part of that. But there is a genuine thing that I've been thinking about from an industry point of view is the cycling industry has until recently been selling people bikes that eventually just end up in their sheds. Basically, people just buy a bike, ride it once, get close past, or don't think it's something they can do regularly, and they just end up in their sheds. And there was data recently that suggested there are, you know, nearly something like 40 million bikes in sheds. So we need to, you know, obviously use these things. And I think e-cargo bikes combined with good infrastructure are at that level where they can and have to be part of your daily life, which I think is a good thing. They can be genuine replacements for people's cars. And even in suburbs or for people who aren't quite ready for that yet, they could be, like for me, they could be a replacement for a second car, for example, or things like that. So that's positive. But I don't have the answer on the figures. We should ask, but we should also, you know, put it into context.
Sorry, Laura, what were you going to add to that?
I was just thinking about what you said about the your Tour de France experience and the football people and giving them e-bikes. Someone had given them e-bikes, but they didn't use them. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
They didn't really use them.
Yeah, no. You can kind of hand someone something, and then I thought for a minute there, Adam was offering to stand by people's garden sheds and like get them to use their bikes that were in there. But I don't think there's enough Adams going around. But yeah,
it's not effective.
They obviously, there's a huge potential for e-bikes. But yeah, it needs the infrastructure. I think there was a propensity to cycle tool, the analysis that showed that one in four commutes could be by bike if we had enough, if we had e-bikes and a decent network. I've been writing about e-bikes a bit actually recently. There's supposedly an e-bike support program coming from the government, and preceding that is a pilot in Cornwall where it's a part of the G7 legacy. So there's supposed to be some sort of like try before you bike or have a go at e-bikes at like National Trust properties or holiday destinations. But it's kind of slow to get off the ground. I think there was going to be some big summer of cycling and walking announcement at some point, but it's looking like a kind of autumn announcement, and I don't know how big it's going to be, but yeah, so I don't
the
know
medium not really summer, kind of, the medium autumn of cycling
medium
walking.
Autumn exactly. I don't think it's really being treated with the kind of urgency, because this with the urgency it needs, it's like this is going to happen at some point. That Cornwall didn't have details when I asked them, the council. Yeah, but I spoke to this really nice guy from Visit Cornwall, who's the tourism guy there, and he was saying that his brother's got an e-bike and he lives outside of, I think, Truro, and is cycling like 4 miles into town and back where he was driving before. So it's like even in kind of rural-ish areas, there's like a huge potential for them. But we're not really doing enough to kind of get people using them.
Cornwall is a good place, right? It's a good place to start Cornwall is great, so
very
that's
hilly.
Thanks to our sponsors Visit Cornwall, but also it is great because it's hilly, and we through my day job provided bikes, specialized bikes for NHS GPs and support staff who would do home visits in Truro actually. Which is great. But the try before you buy thing is really interesting, because when you ride an e-bike and you haven't ridden an e-bike before, you get this kind of like e-bike smile that you get, because it like powers you forward and it feels great. And that's what we should be bottling. So, and kind of selling, so I think it's good that they're doing trials, but they need to be, they need to be widespread, don't they? Rather than just one or two at some point, maybe in the future. Yeah. And we have to make these things more cost effective. Whether you make them cheaper, whether you make them easily easier to finance, or whether you get a government grant, because e-bikes are the only kind of EV that don't have a plug-in subsidy, like a plug-in grant, and that seems weird actually that's the case. And you need to be able to provide a place. I think a lot of people pointed out when I shared stuff around e-cargo is, rightly, you need to be able to have the infrastructure not only to ride the things but store the things. So whether that's residential lockers on streets, whether that's specific stuff at train stations, etc., but we need to have places to store these £3,000-4,000 machines, because they can't sort of just be chained up against a tree.
Yeah, I came away from our visit, Adam, thinking, I'd love to have a cargo bike. Going back to cargo bikes, I'd love to have an e-cargo bike. That'd be great. Great thing to have. I've actually got somewhere I could put it as well. I'm quite fortunate in that regard, because they're big things. And then I thought, I can't really justify it, because I can't remember the last time I needed to move anything that heavy.
You'll find stuff. Once you've got a cargo bike... Yeah. I need to my mate Dave says I need to drop round an old wardrobe.
Just endlessly like, volunteering to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do. You've got a thing heavy that you want moving, because I'd love to do it. But so I wasn't quite sure about that. But it did strike me that I've probably spoken about this in the past. I'm a paid up member of Zipcar.
Me too.
In London, and from time to time I use it because it's incredibly convenient and sometimes. But if there were an e-cargo bike equivalent, because most of the time I use Zipcar, it's precisely to, I've got to pick up something really heavy, I can't get on my bike in London, I would sign up to that. And if there was if I could book one that lived down the end of the road, that how good would that be? That would be a really handy solution, I think. And people would really learn to embrace that.
Yeah.
So that was one kind of real world potential. I wonder if any of the companies are working on that, the idea of sort of being able to book one on the end of your road.
There is there's kind of e-mobility hubs, aren't there?
There's e-mobility hubs, but also at the event that we were at, Ned, there was a bike in the corner, and it had a Beryl written on it, the bike share people, and they are doing a in Hackney, they're doing an e-cargo bike share trial. So you would be able to hire that bike by the hour, I think. Yeah, exactly
what I was just talking about.
Yeah, and I think that can take off in a big way because it's it's exciting. You don't need to have a e-cargo bike all the time, probably.
Yeah.
Unless it's your only bike like mine. Well, actually, no, it's not my only bike. It's my main bike. But yeah, hiring one seems like a great idea, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, if it's coming to Hackney, it'll come to Lewisham in about 10 years then.
They're doing them in Manchester as well. There's e-mobility hubs in Manchester. Cool. So they're like cargo bikes. I think sometimes e-bikes, sometimes electric cars. And I think they've got huge potential because you don't need these things all the time. Unless you're like volunteering for your neighbours. It's kind of good shared mobility option.
Sharing, it's the future.
Sharing, yeah.
Yeah, less stuff as well, isn't it? Less stuff in the world. And that's what we've all got to be sort of working towards. Another real world sort of problem with potentially quite a simple solution that might encourage people to take up this form of logistics a bit more readily occurred to me as I was coming back from the Olympic Park. Because I was thinking, so one of the things that I do that I'm involved in is a startup company, and we sell these big cycling books every year, these annuals. I'm showing you one now, and it's a big hardback book.
That's the road book.
It weighs huge.
I didn't realize it was such an enormous thing.
It's about 1,000 pages long. You know, it's like this big almanac of a year of road racing. And and these are kind of really rather precious and expensive and heavy things, right? They weigh 2 kilograms, and we dispatch them out all across the world, but I think something like 80% of our sales, 75-80%, are in the UK. And I'm a bit sketchy on these details. We're only a cottage industry, but I'm not the guy who kind of signs the contract with the logistics company, you know, and the dispatch. That someone else does that. Harry does that. And I said to Harry, I said, we need to be like, at least in London, where it's feasible, and we sell a lot of books in London, we need to be dispatching these by bike. It would please our clientele. It would be appropriate in every sense, and we need to do that. And he goes, yes, I completely agree, but we've signed a contract with a big national dispatch company to do all our dispatch for us, and they don't offer that as a thing. But to my mind, they should. You know, it's not going to be possible in potentially rural Worcestershire to get the book to Mrs. Bloggs by bike, but I'm damn sure that 50% of the books could be delivered by bike. And there should be, you know, there should be within these big freight companies, there should be an option, you know, that you tick saying as a client, I want my stuff delivered by bike where possible. And I want you to tell me it's been done that way.
I'd pay a couple of quid extra for that.
And if it's a small premium on top, just to kind of incentivize the company, then so be it. Because I think our clients would even buy into that, you know. We charge however much we charge package and posting, if it may be 50p or a quid more, they might even say, yeah, I'll do that. That seems the right thing to do.
Yeah, they'd pay 2 quid more if you came and delivered it, Ned.
Well, yeah. No, they were not. I'm probably the opposite of that, Adam. But I thought that was quite I don't know if any, you know, again, it's just a facet of, I don't even know which company delivers our stuff, but that whoever they are, they don't offer that as an alternative. And we've signed a kind of multi-year contract with them. So we're a bit hamstrung, and we didn't have the vision to kind of approach this before, but I think that would be a thing, wouldn't it?
When we order stuff, I guess, from the food apps, like Just Eat and Deliveroo and all of those ones, you don't know, and you can't choose, and I'm not saying you should be able to necessarily, but you don't know who's going to turn up and buy what mode of transport, basically. And again, you know, I've ordered stuff for work on Deliveroo, and a guy in a car turns up and he's driven half a mile from, you know, whatever, Wagamama's, and done it because we're in a conference meeting or something like that. And you think, well, if I'd known that, it's not part of the process you think about, but if I'd known that, I wouldn't have ordered it. But if I could have made an option, you know, this is a short journey, I want to make sure it's delivered by bike, tick the box. You know, I think loads of people would tick that box. And that would be, you know, the biggest increase that we heard from Will Norman at this event, the biggest increase in kind of traffic in London's roads is the light goods van delivering, typically gig workers delivering stuff from Amazon, until their shares have rapidly dropped after Ned's expletive rant. But you know, so that could be a thing.
I'm the opposite of an influencer. That's what I'm the opposite of an influencer, the destroyer. I'm going to bring Amazon down. Yeah, well, we've just solved the world there, haven't we? That seems like all that seems like a really obvious win for everybody, actually.
Yeah.
Potentially. There must be companies doing that. I can't believe that there aren't.
There is an account on Twitter. It's only small, but there's an account on Twitter, and I'll try and dig it out and put it in the show notes, that kind of collates all the independent traders and people that deliver by cargo bike. Or operate by cargo bike. So if you are in London, as an example, you could make sure that your next plumber arrives by cargo bike, for example.
Yeah, there's a few around my way, actually, because we're not too far from Waltham Forest. So there's a few local businesses that have teamed up with local cargo bike companies. And I know a friend's also in the pandemic got some beer delivered from a local brewery to her house, thanks to that cargo bike. Yeah. Pretty cool.
The other thing that I thought was a real positive that I took away from the other day was the idea of, and we talked about it briefly, the idea of repurposing car parks in the city.
Yeah.
To an extent anyway, to be these kind of depots where bulk stock is kept and then the cargo bikes to and fro all day doing short distances and smaller pickups, which strikes me as a very sensible solution. But I wondered whether that could be, I mean, that's kind of like, okay, so that's the city of London. Where else can you apply that kind of thing? And I think actually, especially in London, I know we bore on about London all the time here, but it is such a big enterprise, and it often can set the tone for how things might be unrolled, you know, in the rest of the country. But London, having been grown up organically as this collection of small towns and villages that merge together, it does have these little centres, you know, all around it. And I think each of those potentially could, like, so just about a quarter of a mile from me, just over there, is a virtually empty 8-story multi-story car park. And it's just a waste of space. Now, what I'm not suggesting is demolish it, because that has a huge environmental cost that I'm only just learning about. You know, the embedded carbon within buildings. You don't just tear them down lightly. If you can adapt them and keep the structures and the walls, then so much the better. But, you know, surely some of that space could be given over to precisely that. So Lewisham has its own hub where all the big companies that have to run the white vans in and around Lewisham all day, they drop everything there, and then there's a little local network of bikes as well. That strikes me as a dream scenario, a kind of utopia that probably won't happen, but I think
it will happen, because it's just like comment. I saw DHL, as I mentioned, I saw a DHL employee two on cargo bikes, and I've seen a FedEx employee. They're starting to realize that this is. And the bottom line will talk at the end of the day. You know, you're in a routine and you do things the same way. But if you can genuinely be more efficient or save money, then you know, that's what influences businesses. They might do the right thing or want to do the right thing, but to really make a difference, you've got to make it more effective. And the thing about logistics is efficiency. And the thing that's least efficient is the last mile part of it. So I think it will become, and car parks, you know, are often in central London, certainly now, are empty. I know car parks in there's a car park in Soho that's privately owned that's leasing its spaces out to a company who are building bike parking there, secure bike parking, because there's not enough secure bike parking in Soho. So I think the writing's on the wall in that respect. The councils, the challenge with councils is councils make money from parking, and really, yes, you need to not just knock down buildings willy-nilly, but we should probably be building housing on multi-story car parks in London, at least. And then if there is, if there's space left over or there's things that don't work for housing, then we should be thinking, you know, what could we do with it?
There's always better, like basement space, isn't there? And like car parking under new flats.
Exactly.
Petrol stations as well. That's another good one.
Yeah. And if failing all that, we could have all-night raves in car parks, which I think is a thing.
I think my all-night rave days are over now.
yeah. Well, there you go. There's some of my thoughts anyway. That was my cargo bike considerations over the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Anything to add, Adam? No? All right. We're shaking your head. Unusually quiet today, Adam, and subdued.
No, I've got a call at 5:30 and need to do another episode after this.
I get it. All right, should we park our cargo bikes there for the week?
Yeah.
And Adam, if you've, you know, suggest any other little days out that I can access and arrange for lovely weather like it was the other day at the Velodrome, that'd be much appreciated.
Hopefully, we'll be a trio next time.
Yeah, yes. Hopefully, Laura, we can actually meet in person again this time when you're out of prison.
And if listeners want to suggest places we go, we had an invite to Oxford the other day, which we probably will do at some point.
Yeah.
So if you'd like us to come and visit you and see how good or bad the cycling infrastructure is, amongst other things, if there's good coffee, that will help, then let us know.
Well, I had an idea just briefly before we wrap things up, Adam. I had a little idea that might appeal to you. Didn't appeal to me, but I was cycling back from the velodrome, Herne Hill Velodrome, the other day through a part of South London called East Dulwich, which is in the borough of Lambeth, I think. And there are, actually, I couldn't see any, but there are self-evidently quite a lot of LTNs in Lambeth. And there is really quite an organised and well-backed campaign to have them scrapped and removed.
The Dulwich Alliance.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, street after street, almost every house was displaying a green sign saying stop the road closures.
Yeah.
Now, I was just quite struck by how visible it was and how quite unanimous it seemed to be in terms of, you know, the numbers of people on the street who decided that was the hill they were prepared to at least stick a green thing on. And I thought, in the interests of balance and fairness, we should probably have a listen to what they say. Mm. And then I thought, I'll suggest Adam does. Walk up and down the street with a microphone. But do you not think it would be kind of instructive to hear some of these voices?
Yeah, I think so. Why not? Yeah, I've cycled through there a few times and I saw one of those. I saw a guy with a van driving into a house, like a driveway, was one of those. And I thought, oh, yeah. I think that area, it's got Croxted Road, which is a big through route from Croydon. Mm. And I think traffic there is genuinely bad. So you really notice when the side roads are closed to through traffic. But yeah, I think it would be an interesting one, wouldn't it? Good idea.
We'll have a little think.
Yeah.
In the meantime, yeah, as Adam says, though, if there's stuff that you want us to go and look at, we're up for a day trip, basically. That's all we're interested in. A little bit of fun. Yeah. Thank you very much, Adam. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks.
Thank you.
See you soon. You've been listening to Streets Ahead. Let us know what you think, as ever, at Pod Streets Ahead. Rate us and review us and share the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it. And we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.